Go live. Happy Halloween season to all of our scare guys and scare gals who are out there. Trick or treat yourself. All right, Danae, I like that. Is that beer?
No,
that's pretty cool.
It is a pink cider.
That's fantastic.
About as far as
it looks orange from here.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. This week, it's all about Halloween all the time with LA's Scream Fest. With a special guest who has his film premiering this weekend at LA Scream Fest. We're going to talk about Halloween TV specials and our picks for spooky movies to watch in October. My name is Jim Fry, one of your horror hosts tonight. And we'll start with the red box up top. Who do we have with us tonight?
Hey, everybody. It's me, Katie. Back for another scare guy. I know we've had a few weeks off, but we're back and I'm excited to talk about some of the Halloween specials and spooky season. I've got my cup of choice tonight, which is my lovely Skull Cup. So, you know, I'm excited. I'm happy we are finally in October.
So exciting. But, who's below Katie?
Sorry. Hello, I'm Janae Sams. I am one of the kind of regulars on the Con Guy. I'm one half of the Con Girls. I'm one half of the Samblings. The other half isn't here because he's busy being a dad. Whatever. But I'm so excited that it's October. Got my cat ears, got my pumpkin shirts. My window is open and it's dark and the trees are shaking in the wind. So let's do a scare guy. I'm excited.
I know, for those of you who are here in Los Angeles or in the West Coast, it is windy tonight. It's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, who else do we have with us?
It's windy.
Okay, Ben.
Hey, everybody. It's me, old buddy Ben. I haven't been on the show in a hot minute, so I'm excited to be back here. I almost bailed tonight. Ah. And then I was like, no. Heavens no, I shan't. And I'm glad I didn't. I'm super glad to be here because I watched Matthew's film this afternoon and I thought it was a lot of fun. So I'm super excited. I am going to talk a little bit about a not Halloween thing tonight. We'll cover that later. I'm going to try to make it concise and short, but we'll have fun. Other than that, I'm excited to be here.
But Ben, we got cool pictures and you guys dressed up. It's as Halloween as it gets. It's all I'm going to say. It's an easy one for me to
it's
make.
It's back to cosplaying, so you know.
By the way, I'm wearing one of my favorite t-shirts from our good friends over at Monster Tees. This is the discontinued Bela Lugosi t-shirt. You can't get it anymore. So, you know, it's pretty exclusive. But shout out to our friends over at Monster Tees. Love your stuff. Go check out their stuff on the interwebs.
T-E-A-S-E, like he's teasing you. Monster Tees.
Monster Tees.
Yes, and I'm wearing something from our friends over at, what's the store? Dark Delicacies. I got this over at Dark Delicacies. It's the it's sort of the Universal Monsters, but what's the movie, the little kids? Monster Squad.
Monster Squad.
When they couldn't really call him the Universal Monster, so they barely made him a little bit different. So this is what I'm wearing tonight. By the way, we have been off for a couple of weeks, and we're going to talk about that not tonight, but maybe next week, because some of us were down in Orlando, Florida, experiencing Universal Orlando's Halloween Horror Nights, and boy, oh boy, was it awesome. It was so great. But we have a very special guest with us tonight. His name is Matthew McWilliams, and he is here to talk to us about his new short film, Angel City Horror. Welcome, Matt, to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me along. Yeah, first time here. So great meeting you.
We are so glad you're here. And you're amongst family. We're a bunch of filmmakers here. And so we'll talk a little bit of shop. But Matt, first of all, just start off, let us get to know you and tell us a little bit about your journey into filmmaking.
Well, I'm originally from Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Yeah, land of a thousand lakes. I grew up cane pole fishing in Canada with my Nordic family, I suppose. my journey was kind of interesting. I went to school in Arizona, University of Arizona, then didn't know what I was supposed to do. Went out to Montana to have fun with my brother out there, and ended up getting on a Saab commercial, actually, from Los Angeles. Met some people and wanted to come down, and just made some contacts and kind of just like scraped by for years, as so many of us do, you know, like that's, I would say that's a similar story for a lot of people out here. And just got by and made more contacts, really came down like I wanted to direct, like that was the goal. Didn't really know how to make it happen. It's been a long journey trying to figure that out. You know, a lot of people say, well, the answer to how do you get into directing is you have to direct. And that's the simplest explanation, but it's also not simple, because if you know, you can't just like show up and say, I want to direct. You got to make those connections and you got to figure out how to do that. So that's been the journey of like working in the industry, working in art department, you know, doing the day job, doing the grind, but also like every day, like just keeping it in focus and being motivated to when you got free time, utilizing that, writing your scripts, getting people involved, getting people excited about your projects and doing it, you know?
That's cool. How long have you been at it?
Well, I've been in LA since 2009. I think I'm coming on like 12 years at this point. But, you know, as far as film, my first film was, I think, came out in 2017. Yeah, I mean it's been a long time trying to build, like I said, build like the community of filmmakers to get to that point to make films with people. But yeah, I'm it's that machine that just keeps turning. You just gotta keep it going so it doesn't slow down, and that's what I'm trying to do, is just keep the momentum going for that.
Well, we're going to talk about your film, which is premiering this weekend at LA Scream Fest. It's the Scream Fest Horror Film Festival. It's the largest and longest running horror film festival in the United States. The most notably, perhaps, Paranormal Activity was discovered and premiered at this festival in 2007. And it has some of the largest horror online publications. Some of the largest online horror publications have called it Sundance of Horror. So I know that Ben and Katie, I don't know, Danae, did you get a chance to see the film? Okay. Well, Ben and Katie saw it and they said they have some questions. So
sure, shoot.
We're going to jump right into your film, Angel City Horror. All right, guys, what questions do you have?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to comment that when Jim sent us the link, he wrote Angel City Horror in the subject line. And I just wanted to point that out.
Ben thought this was a geometric movie.
Yeah. You're watching, you're like, I don't see many angles in here. I'm missing it.
You thought it was going to be all Dutch angles, right, Ben?
Yeah.
It was just all Batman blood. No, I loved it. I think I'm just going to start off by saying how much I really enjoyed the motif, the design, the production design. You're blending these awesome things, a lot of comic book elements. There's a lot of, you know, you've taken the, well, I guess I want to ask about that. Is there a specific computer program that you used or editing software that you used to get the kind of hyper-realistic comic book panels? Because this opens up with a lot of like swishing, you know, motion graphic book panels, and then fades into reality. There you go. There's a great example of it. But that was taken off of a live shot of a live guy who was insane. And so what were you using to do to create that effect?
So basically for the illustrations, I have a guy who also did the poster for us. His name's Jason Ragasta. He was the illustrator that I pretty much sent him different still images from the film, you know, screen grabs. And I kind of like figured out what the exact frame was, sent him that frame. And then he illustrated over that to turn that actual film frame into a graphic illustration. And then like also like what was cool about it was with having the graphic illustrations, you're not you can do so much more with the shot. Like if you want to add things, which we did, you know, obviously with the poster, but if you want to add things in their hands or in the background, you can kind of, you know, put extra things in there that in physical production you weren't able to do. Mm-hmm. But to answer your second question about the like comic book swishing and transitioning and all that stuff, that was through a program that you can purchase called Motion Array. And there's different, I've actually been seeing them on like on the face on my Facebook feed a lot, but there's like cinematic packages that you can buy that have like already made incredible effects, whether it's like muzzle flashes or like tornadoes or what have you. Like the technology right now is incredible. Like if you just buy like this package of effects, you can do just incredible things with your film. So Motion Array was something that had those, you know, it can get different title effects and different things like that. Ours was, I looked up comic books and they had, thankfully they had this page that had some movement in it. So that goes into, I believe it was After Effects. You can take this program mm-hmm. that they designed and put it into After Effects, and then you can manipulate it even more. So that's when we were able to take our graphic images, plop them in there, and then move the camera around that page how we wanted it to. And then some of the other simpler transitions were just like a white bar that we, you know, edited across and timed it, you know. So there's a couple different tricks we did. But yeah, it was a fun way to bring it all together and make it one cohesive piece, because that was kind of like, you know, kind of racking your brain of like, man, we've got all these different elements. Like, how do you make it all fit together? But I mean, I think we did. So I was happy, you know, I was happy with how it turned out.
Yeah, it was really cool. And I liked that the and maybe you can confirm this. When I watched it, I thought, okay, once all the pieces are putting together, you know, about 2 or maybe 3 minutes in, and you see it flashes from comic book cells into live action, but it's this very old Hollywood noir, and almost I thought of it as a callback to like the old pulp comic books from like mm-hmm. the 30s and 40s, where it wasn't, you know, right leading up to the time of Superman and the superhero movement, it was more Dick Tracy and detectives and that sort of thing. Is that kind of the style you were going for?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there wasn't anything like specific that's like, hey, I want to do exactly that. You know, I think it was a bunch of different things. I love Dick Tracy. I grew up with that. And there's a really, you know, those characters are really over the top, at least all of those, from what I recall, all the like gangster types were just like over the top with what their look and who their personalities and their characters. And that was really cool. And, you know, as far as that, as far as the characters goes, I really wanted to just kind of make these over the top, kind of, you know, a little bit, you know, a little tropey, but familiar, you know, mm-hmm. that people respond to. And I kind of think like, you know, so many times there's so many opportunities to make period pieces, and we they're so refreshing to see, because it's like this different world that we're not used to anymore, and there's different styles and the way people dressed and everything. So yeah, I think, you know, Dick Tracy was one of those. Another one that comes to mind as far as like the look and the feel was Dark City.
Yeah, yeah.
And that one was man, it just blew my mind. I think I watched it in film school, and just it was like, it was so noir. I mean, it was like almost over the top noir. But that, like, just the, it was the way it was, the style and the look, it was so neat that, yeah, I mean, that's what comes to mind. And I just, like I said, it wasn't one specific thing, but it's just like taking these different ideas and the things that I like and kind of just like putting them together. And I think it just kind of came out organically, you know?
And I must break in just for a second to say hello to Justin Clark. Aloha, guys.
Justin
Nathan Redda. Cool. And of course, Ben.
Blood God.
Forgive me for like looking around like this. One of my dogs is in here, and she's like, "I want out." So I might.
Hold on. When did you get a second dog?
I saw that
about a week ago.
Which dog is inside the room with you?
Kylie's in here with me.
Okay, gotcha.
All right, Katie, you had some questions.
Yeah, well, first of all, I was going to ask. First of all, I want to say kind of what Ben did, and I enjoyed it. I really like short-form horror or bite-sized horror, as you might say, because, you know, you don't have to commit this long amount of time to get into the story, and I like it. It's just like you don't have to have all these, like, asking all these questions, because there's not time. It's just like short and to the point. And I really appreciated that. But also, I mean, you know, we were talking about the comic book feel. And last year, the Scare Guy was blessed with interviewing Greg Nicotero about Creepshow.
Yeah.
And Creepshow has similar things like that too. Mm-hmm. So I kind of thought of that. But what I did like, and it's not a spoiler, but it's a tiny thing. I like what you guys did with sound. And how you also incorporated the comic book type things with
you. Yeah.
Without ruining it for the audience who hasn't seen it, I thought that was just a fun little gimmick that I really enjoyed, because
like this,
it kind of gave me reminiscent of like Kick-Ass as well, because I love Kick-Ass a lot. But in horror. So, but my other question is because of the animation that you're doing that you had to do with the comic books and illustrations and stuff, how long did this film take from start to finish? Because that had to take a while.
Yeah. So this was like the longest short film. I could have made a feature for easily in the time. But I mean, then think about this. We're coming out of, you know, COVID world too. So
yeah.
Overall, simple answer is 2 years. It took 2 years.
Wow.
We went back for reshoots. We had to reshoot some things, some more effects, that definitely took some time. And then, man, it was like every step is why you need like a post-production like coordinator or something. Cause every step was just like another, like, oh, we got this thing done now. The next thing, like whether it was, doing the sound or doing the color, we spent so much time on sound. Carlos Vivas, he did such a good job. He's so talented. And we just, every detail, we went into this thing wanting to get, I mean, we went into it trying to get perfection, like everybody does. It never is. But that took a lot of time. Sound did. Color wasn't too bad. But the animation, the animation was, this is something I've never done before. And I was talking with Jason Ragosta, who is way more versed. He does comic stuff. I mean, he's way more versed in that. So it was kind of like this trying to learn from the very beginning, like 101, how do we go about this? And it was just kind of like the same way, kind of like storyboarding, kind of had to figure out what information in each cell I'm trying to tell, you know, because that was what a lot of that was for, besides the stylistic element and make, you know, the style of the film, the look of it. It was also to help tell the narrative story of the characters quickly and put as much information as we could in there to enrich like the characters and everything. The other thing that, you know, COVID happened. So I was 4 months not doing much. I just had we just had a newborn daughter, our first child, right before COVID. So there was a lot of different things that kind of fit into there, a little bit of a hiatus. But yeah, it took 2 years. But the good thing about it was COVID, the silver lining of this horrible thing, right, is that it allowed us to really dive deep and take our time. Whereas so many filmmakers, once they make their film, they feel so rushed to get it to festivals and get it out there and just like do this, do that. But you got to take your time and you got to do it right. And that's what we were trying to do. We had the time and thankfully we utilized it, I think, you know, to the best of our abilities.
Nice. So can you walk us through, without ruining any of the plot, really, just give us kind of a synopsis. What is it that we're talking about? What's your story about?
Yeah. You know, it's, it's a pretty simple story. You got 9 minutes, but in its base, it's a period piece that takes place in Los Angeles in the 1950s. It's a horror film. It's also incorporates film noir. It's animation. It's live action. I'm sorry, my dog is scratching at my door. Just give me 1 second.
Come on, I know the feeling.
Yeah. It's just this hybrid film, and it's the story is basically two LAPD detectives. These two guys right up here, Detective George Hard and Glenn O'Brien. They come across some evidence that leads them to investigate a missing person at LA's most notorious insane asylum. And that's where they meet this very interesting head nurse. And yep, there she is right there. Very much inspired by, I'd say, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Nurse Ratched. Mm-hmm. And they find some really weird stuff in there. And then at its most simplest core, that's our film.
It gets weird.
That was
it
a good synopsis. Weird.
Hey, and by the way, the show here, we are friends with one of your main actors, Patrick Joseph Rieger, who was supposed to be on the show tonight, but he had a previous engagement. Actually, we were his previous engagement. He flaked on us, but we...
Tell us how you really feel.
Nah, Petter's a good guy, and he did a really good job with this. All of your actors did a really good job. Yeah. I loved the noir feel, and I loved the comic book, and the nurse was great.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of like a surprising twist, like... I didn't see it going where it went. Yeah. I don't know if anybody else did, but that was not what I was expecting.
Well, and when the nurse first came on, I was like, ugh, what a this type of character. And then she gets like two lines in and I'm like, okay, she could be a Batman villain. Like, you know, like.
Yeah. It was fun. Because I thought the same thing, Ben. I was like, oh no. Like, and then all of a sudden I was like, okay, I'm invested. Like, this is intriguing. So, and I think that you did do a great job at portraying all those different types of genres in there, in just a short little 8-9 minute film. It was amazing. But I'm sure Jim will ask this, but I'm just gonna do it because I don't know what Jim was planning on asking. But
I have nothing.
This is going to be debuting at the film festival.
Yeah.
But how would other people watch this, or are they able to once it's done at the festival?
Well, that's a good question. We're screening this Saturday. There's a short block 4 at 4:15 at the Chinese Theater. So obviously that's the best way to watch it. It's going to be the most exciting and most memorable. It's going to be a really amazing night. Other than that, we are also part of the New York City Horror Film Festival. We've been accepted into that, which is, we'll find out. I haven't done this before, but it's still virtual. So you should be able to, I don't have experience, and if I get more information, I can definitely share it. But you should be able to buy tickets and view from your home computer with that. So that's one way. As far as app, you know, I'm going into 2022 with the festival circuit too. So, you know, unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of ways to watch it until I'm done with that, you know, and then I got to figure out where to go with it after that. It could just go on to, you know, it could go to YouTube on my page or something like that. But to be continued on that.
All right. And then also, obviously, when you make a short film like this, the question, I feel like it's an obvious question, but also, you know, sometimes it's not, is do you want to see this story expanded or another one or a feature? Are those all any things that you would be interested in the future with this film?
Yeah, so it's a good question. It's also a complex question for me. We developed this as a short horror series for Crypt TV. And they're very specific on what they want. They used to, when they started, they were kind of like, I just want horror content, but they've they very quickly evolved into one of these specific things, and they're very monster centric. So we did is like we developed this into like, you know, what first episode as a short series around the monster, and then kind of reverse engineered it from there, and it became what it is. As far as, and so we were kind of looking at it as a short TV series, and then we're like, well, you know what, let's develop this further. Let's look at having this be a full length TV series, you know, like streaming hour long, you know, 8-episode series. Mm-hmm. And so we've been developed. I say we, it's my producing partner, Josh Murphy, and I, we've been developing this for like 2 years now. I mean, since we started. But I think, you know, what we're really excited about is actually getting away from the series idea and have it more contained into a feature. So that's what we're going towards. And that's our goal. We're really looking forward to that, because I think it's going to give us just a better way to condense all the things that we love into, you know, manageable size quicker than the series, which is, you know, I come from the feature and the shorts. So the TV world is a little bit different as well. So, this is something more familiar and I think more obtainable and easier for, I'd say, you know, in indie filmmakers versus like trying to sell a TV show to like networks. You know what I mean?
Yep. And before we end this section, I just want to see if Ben has any other questions for you.
No.
Hey, Matthew, remind us again where your film is premiering this week and how people can see it if they happen to be in the Los Angeles area.
So the ScreenFest red carpet event is tomorrow night. It starts tomorrow. My film, Angel City Horror, will be premiering on Saturday the 16th at 4:15. It's called the Shorts Block 4, number 4. So you can get tickets, go to ScreenFest, and you can get tickets for that day for that shorts block and come and check us out. There's going to be like 5 films in there. It's like a 2-hour block, but there's going to be, you know, there's gonna be a step and repeat there to take pictures. There's going to be a lot of, you know, great filmmakers there. There's going to be, really good actors and actresses and stars. So, I mean, just come out and check it out, because I've never been there. I've never even been to the Chinese Theater before. I've been here for 12 years. So I'm stoked. Oh, so, wow. I mean, for anybody who hasn't been there, or if you have been there, I mean, this is going to be an amazing event. So that's the way to do it for now.
Chinese Theater is one of the most iconic theaters in existence. It's so beautiful. And it reminds us what we love about Hollywood. It does remind us of old Hollywood. So it's so apropos that you have a noir. Hollywood, Angel City Horror, which is Angel City Noir, but with a scary twist thrown in. Anyways, Matthew, thank you for coming on. And if you guys get a chance, go check out the Scream Fest. It's a 10-day festival. If you love horror movies and if you like rubbing elbows with the filmmakers that make them, go check it out. There's a lot of good stuff there. And a lot of what you're seeing there, you will soon see later on the big screen around the country, because it's one of the what do you call it? The testing grounds for great new content. So yeah. Matthew, thank you so much.
Yeah, of course.
And I know that Matthew has some things he has to attend to, and we're going to let him do it. But Matthew, you're welcome to stay on as long as you want. We are going to move into the next couple of sections of the show. But Matthew, where could people find out more about your work, your film, or if they are interested in finding out what's next for you?
Yeah, I think the best way, Facebook, just at Angel City Horror Movie. And Instagram is at Angel City Horror. Otherwise, my personal page as well, at Matt P. McWilliams on Instagram, works as well. It's all interconnected. So you follow one, you'll be included. So,
all right. Fantastic. Thanks, Matt.
Awesome.
Thanks,
thank you guys so much. It was a pleasure.
And get on Patrick. Thank you, next time he's got to come on.
I will. I'm going to give him some heck.
All right. Talk to you later, Matthew.
All right. Bye.
All right. And next on the show, bum, bum, bum. Ben has some really cool stuff he's going to talk to us about. And Ben, I'm just going to go along with the pictures and let you kind of walk us through it.
Okay. Let me give a little intro really quickly first. Yeah. So for the last, let's see, how do I explain Wasteland to the uninitiated?
It's like a surprise party.
Yeah. People call it Burning Man for nerds. Yes. I've always compared it to, it's like a Renaissance fair, except it's not the Renaissance. It's the Mad Max post-apocalypse. It is a desert festival that has been happening out in the Mojave outside of California City, California, since 2010. And essentially, it had some small beginnings. Now, literally thousands of people come to this every year, or at least they did up until 2019, which was the year 10 of the festival. And then, of course, as everything else did, 2020 was canceled. Then they started it up again this year in 2021. Now, the festival itself is centered around the idea of it is the post-apocalypse, whatever you interpret that as. You kind of need to stay within a general set of guidelines of things like the Mad Max movies or the Fallout video games or anything really in entertainment media, comics, books, anything like that, that has to do with the post-apocalypse. It's not necessarily a cosplay. Like, you're not like, I'm post-apocalyptic Batman. No, they don't, you know, you do have to be in costume when you are there, but they encourage all kinds of acceptance of, if you're really crummy at making costumes, then you just show up in like some drab pants and a cut off t-shirt. That's great. You're still there. And you're having fun. So the event is in theme. There is a central wasteland city, which is where kind of all the quote unquote commerce takes place. In a typical year, you will have things such as the Last Chance Casino, which is a gambling establishment, but there is no money in the post-apocalypse. So they have Last Chance Casino issued bottle caps that you use as currency. In a typical year, you'll also have the Thunderdome, as you know from Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. That there is a picture of the Thunderdome right there. And as you can see, much like in the movie, people are climbing up on the sides to view these fights. And essentially, you are suspended by bungees and given a Nerf baseball bat and then shoved at each other to beat each other to death with them. And this is a photo photograph by Thomas Kearns, who is a wonderful, magnificent photographer. I lifted this photograph off of Google. Thomas, I love your work. You've taken several pictures of me that are just incredible and fantastic. So please don't hate me for using one of your pictures on the show. I make no money off of this. The event itself is so much fun because you can do any number of things. You can just show up. It is entirely camping. So you do have to have your own campsite or shared with your friends and provide your own food, water, et cetera, sleeping arrangements. There are no sleeping arrangements on premises, and the bathrooms are all porta-johns, which are serviced multiple times daily. But then you get in costume and you spend, most of us stay in the shade during the day because it gets really hot out in the desert, even in September, because this happens at the end of September. And then once it starts cooling off later in the afternoon, you start going out. You can barter and trade with people who have brought crafts. You can buy things with old world money. That's good old fashioned American currency. This year they had a lot more internet, like credit card swipes and Square and stuff like that out there, which is cool. They had a few more food truck options. The Thunderdome was not there this year. Wasteland City centers around a music stage. They have bands and DJs come and play. You can dance the night away. Events go. There's a picture of this is from the back of the stage looking out at the crowd. I don't know who the band is. I'm sorry. But they do music and activities until I think about 3 a.m. every night. And this wow. generally runs from Wednesday through Sunday. Sunday morning is basically when everybody packs up and leaves. You also have around there on the stage area, Jim, can you pull up that picture of the Atomic Cafe?
Give me one second. Yeah, that's the one that I didn't load, but I'm going to find it right now.
No worries. Basically this, there's not, the Atomic Cafe, the Atomic Cafe is a bar on premises that serves drinks, but you can tip the bartenders, but you're not actually exchanging money for the drinks. There's certain legal issues with that. But it's a big drinking thing. You're walking around in full garb, like you're from the post-apocalypse.
Got it.
There's the Atomic Cafe.
Love it.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And this is all located inside Wasteland City. And the kind of idea is that all the tribes from around the Wastelands, oh yeah, and people do dope modifications to cars. As you can see, there are some folks in costume in the back there. As you can see, this one has motorcycle. That's like from a Kawasaki KZ1000.
That is awesome looking.
Look at this one. I love this.
And you can kind of see the people in the background there in costume. So it's, you know, people go all out for this, but the thing is you show up and people have fake weapons and machetes and stuff strapped to them and bullet casings and all this kind of stuff. You have never met a more, that's me, sitting in my grand chair.
Wait, what's your name? He has a cool name.
I am called the Dutchman.
I love that. That's so cool.
Thanks. So you do get a Wasteland name. If you see on the right hand side here, right next to my left hand in the picture, there's a nice little bottle of Pedialyte.
I was gonna say you have some Pedialyte there.
Very important in the desert to have.
Gotta stay hydrated.
But yeah, so it is all about that kind of Mad Max post-apocalypse style. This is a photograph from my wife Brianna and I. We had a Wasteland wedding.
There you go.
Just a few months after our actual wedding. And that is up on a hill outside of Wasteland City, the Dutchman and the Duchess getting married. We were part of a tribe that was called Camp Eat the Rich. That was us. And
here's your nighttime camp.
Yes, this was our Eat the Rich, the camp for Eat the Rich. Now, we were inside what was called the themed zone, which is just outside the central Wasteland City. So you have the central Wasteland City, then just outside of that is the themed zone where your camps have to be in post-apocalypse theme. And then outside of that is the general camping zone that's separated into different blocks with fun names. The one back in the corner away from everything is called Silent Death. And that's where you camp if you want to get a good night's sleep.
Ooh.
This is part of the car parade, as you can see some war boys from Mad Max Fury Road.
I was gonna say very Mad Mask.
Riding there, but there are a ton of modified vehicles at this event, and they do a big parade at the beginning of the week, a big parade at the end of the week, and kind of like a daily parade or semi-daily parade. People just get in the cars and drive around. Of course, you have to stay under 5 miles an hour. Otherwise, the entire place would go up in smoke. Dust, literally. It's a fun time. And as I said, you have these scary-looking people sporting weapons and things like that. This is a picture from our fancy hat competition. I believe this gentleman won the fancy hat competition.
Is this from this year, Ben?
These are all from years past. I didn't take any pictures this year.
Gotcha.
You have never met a more open, I would say wholesome, but it's a wholesome that's not family friendly wholesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a kind, loving, caring, accepting group of people that are just stoked that you're there and dressed up and in theme. And what's your Wasteland name? Oh, my Wasteland name is Rat Butthole. Like, literally, there will be people. Yes, War Boys, Justin Clark. But it is a blast. I think the tickets are between $200 and $300. Of course, it's a 5-day festival. It's at the end of September. You can go to wastelandweekend.com and look up more. There's all kinds of videos all over YouTube. I am working on starting my own tribe for the coming years of the festival. We're calling ourselves the Sons of the Beach. And we are kind of a nautical surfer pirate themed tribe. And we're very excited about developing that, because when you start decorating your camp, people get real creative and it's a lot of fun.
I know that Cheeseman, who's not here tonight, he has said that as soon as he's able, he wants to go out there to that event.
Oh, I would love to have Cheese out with us. But it is kind of a Burning Man environment. There was way more nudity this year than there has been in years past. So that's one thing just to be aware of before you go out. But it is private property,
The Kern County Sheriff does have a presence out there just to make sure everybody's safe. You know, there's, you know, federal laws still apply.
Yeah.
What were the COVID restrictions like?
That's a good question. This year they required proof of vaccination for entry from everybody, proof of full vaccination for entry for everyone who entered. And in fact, somebody did try to get in with a fake vax card and they have now been banned from the event for life.
Wow.
So they took it very seriously this year.
Yeah. I'm curious because I've heard of this happening before and I'm like, how do they know? Like, I can't even read what the nurse wrote on my card when I got my vax. Like,
I don't think it'll work. So the digital one you can't fake though, right?
They required you to sign up with the free, and this is for Southern California specifically, or for California specifically, the free California state registration for COVID vaccination. Because it, when you do get your COVID vaccination, it does get registered with the state Department of Public Health, and they have a website. I can't remember it off the top of my head, but you can go there and they will give you a unique QR code that is attached to your name. And there's a program that you can scan it and it'll say,
oh, so yep, you can just scan your card and then it'll be digital. I didn't know that. Thank you, Ben.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, you go to the website, you type in your name, date of birth. And
then you're either your email or phone number.
Something like that. Whatever you use to actually get your shot. And then they'll send, and then you, you have to create a PIN number.
Okay.
They'll email you. Yeah,
I'm covering mine up.
You create
a QR code right there.
Yeah, you create a PIN number. They email you with a link. You have to click on the link, enter your PIN number, and then they'll give you
a personal identification number.
Yeah, PIN number, personal identification number.
Interesting point though. Like today, Justin Clark vaccinated, but choose not to do digital. Thankfully, places here are taking pictures. Yeah. Whoops. Oh, look there.
That is Wasteland Weekend. They've kind of taken ownership of the F word. So the friendly greeting of Wasteland Weekend is to say F you to somebody, but actually say it, not say F you.
Oh, you had a picture I should have shown tonight of that on the side of your tent.
Yes.
So and, F-F-Y-O-U.
No.
Actually,
never mind.
Saying it.
Saying it.
And then if I may, I don't know if I can do this on camera or not,
but
this is the official hand sign of Wasteland Weekend. As you can see, it's a W made up of me flipping the bird with both hands.
I think he had a picture of that. Is that kind of... well, it's partly. It's just some... It's just the bird.
Yeah. Well, and that was part of our Eat the Rich our hand signal for Eat the Rich specifically was pinkies out, mother effers. So that's
all right.
So we would drink from our cups like this and that sort of thing.
Hey, Ben, I know that like for Burning Man and like Coachella and some of the big desert festivals, there's a waiting list and it's very hard to get tickets. Like how hard was it to get tickets to Wasteland?
This year, I think they had about 3/4 as many people go as they generally do. I think a lot of people obviously stayed home. Tickets in a regular year will sell out, but it's not like, for example, Comic-Con or something like that, where they sell out in 10 minutes. So generally over the summer, there's a lot of people that are like, not sure if I'm going this year, maybe I will, maybe I won't. And then they buy tickets in August or something like that. So generally once tickets go on sale, which is usually sometime in the late spring, probably around March or April, I would imagine, maybe May. You've got some flexibility in your time to purchase tickets, but yeah, it's not something that there's not a wait list generally or anything like that.
And this is usually around Labor Day weekend.
It's usually the last weekend of September.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's a little bit later than Labor Day. Good.
Yeah, a little bit later.
Because I'm very interested, but I also want to go to Dragon Con, which I was not able to make, and which is Labor Day weekend. So September's getting busy. It's getting busy. All right, guys. Any other questions about Wasteland?
Ben, I do have a random question. Just because, you know, I know that you have to camp. But do people bring, because you, I know you said there's a theme zone, so you have to have your campsite in theme. But if you're not in the theme zone, do they allow campers and stuff like that for people?
There is a whole section of the not themed. You know, remember I said there are different blocks with names. One of them is called the RV Blockade.
Gotcha.
And they generally, a lot of the RVs park out there. Even in the themed zone, what I've seen a lot is the front of the camp is themed, and then back farther back, you have your normal tents and stuff like that. I have a pickup truck. I have a tent that goes in the bed of the pickup and a mattress that goes in there. And I just go out and camp in that thing. And one year when I was in the themed zone with Camp Eat the Rich, I threw like camo netting over the tent, and that was pretty much good enough because I was farther back towards the back end of the camp anyway. So
gotcha.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. But the one thing is that you can't just show up in jeans and a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. You do have to have some kind of costume that's in theme.
That.
It does not have to be complex or complicated. It can just be, you know, tea staining is a big thing. Take a white t-shirt and tea stain it. And then some cut off shorts and you're pretty good. There's a little bit of a stigma against blue denim, like blue denim. But if you got something that's pretty weathered and grayed out, that'll do.
Yeah, that's cool. I think that's awesome. On a side note, Ben saw the picture. I didn't send it to you, Jim, but another one of my friends also goes every year, and she went again and she won the swimsuit competition. Because they have a swimsuit competition.
There is a Wasteland swimsuit competition, but it is, the judging is based around the creativity of the make of the swimsuit. You know, it has to be in theme. Camp Eat the Rich, one of our members, a lovely young woman from the UK. She and her husband came over from the UK for Wasteland in 2019. She made a bikini entirely out of caution tape. With like flowing streamers of caution tape coming out.
I can see Katie making some of these costumes.
Why? Because I have a caution tape dress. Yeah, I know.
Yes.
My friend did a Deacon Waterworld themed swimsuit. So that's what she won with. So.
All right. Wasteland. It's towards the end of September next year. Ben will keep us apprised of when we need to sign up if we are interested in going. And it's a lot of fun, but it doesn't sound like it's for the faint of heart. It's in the freaking middle of the desert, for crying out loud. So you got to be a little bit more rugged.
Hydrate.
Yeah. All right. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. All right. We got just a couple more things to talk about. We're not going to spend a lot of time on them, but one of the things I did want to talk about tonight, this is very special to me. I know Katie has already informed me she has some conversations to have with me tonight, but I am one of those people, and I was trying to upload another picture, but it just wasn't going to upload. For lack of a better word, I'm from a previous generation. The world has passed me by. Oh, wait, here we go. This is me as a little kid. That's those famous Cooper outfit, the Cooper boxed costumes that all the kids had with the plastic mask you put on with a rubber band around your head.
Are you the tiger, Jim?
No, I'm the bigger one. I'm the Frankenstein. That's my brother Scott. He's the tiger.
Oh, I get
from a long time ago.
I was gonna make a comment, but I shall hold back.
Well, you might what?
I was gonna be like the round cheeks. I was like, oh yeah, that looks like Jim with the round face. But
we
I was
kind
like,
of no, look alike.
A little bit of baby fat. That's what I'm looking at there. Sorry.
No, but right now we have like so many options of what we do with our time and what we watch and what we participate in, what we play, where we go. Back in the 70s, when I was a child, a wee child, having holiday specials on television was a big, big deal, a very big deal. And the two biggest of the year, of course, were the two Charlie Brown specials and the Grinch special. At Christmas time, it's Charlie Brown and the Grinch. And at Halloween, it's the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown. And if we were lucky, we would also get the Grinch had a Halloween special as well. And I just want to ask you guys, do any of you remember growing up, besides Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown, any other Halloween specials that you remember fondly?
Man.
I was a pastor's kid, so no.
I just watched, okay, I didn't watch the Halloween specials. I just watched the Disney Channel original Halloween movies.
What? No, but that's a big deal. Like, the very first Disney movie of all Disney Channel movie of all time was about a mummy. What was it?
Under wraps. They just
I don't
want to
talk
it.
About
I don't
that.
Know how I
that's
feel.
How.
Oh, have you seen it yet? The new one?
I refuse to watch the new one.
No, wait. What is this?
Okay, so as you said, Under Wraps. Sorry, Katie, I didn't mean to step on you. So Under Wraps, as you said, was the first Disney Channel original movie, and it was a Halloween movie. So for me, just to reflect on the previous statement, I grew up watching Charlie Brown Halloween special every year. Loved it. I think there might have been a Garfield one too.
There was.
Yeah. But then as I was, when did it come out? Like 98, 7, 99, something around there.
Under Wraps, 97.
So I was like a 12, 13 year old kid, in 97. So I was kind of like at the top end of the age for, well, maybe not so much, maybe kind of, a little older, but still in the age range for who this was aimed at. And I was excited about it. I watched it, and it's a dumb movie. Like it's a dumb movie, but it's a great memory for me. And we still watch it every year. We bought it streaming on Amazon like 4 years ago because you couldn't find it anywhere else.
Yep.
And now it's I don't know if the original's on Disney Plus or not, but we still watch it every year. We watched it like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Because I love it because it's a great memory. And now Disney Plus has done a reboot or a remake, of Under Wraps, and my wife is coming in.
Under Wraps got a remake.
Yeah, my wife just swarmed in here talking about Under Wraps. So we're not sure how to feel about it because obviously
the original is no longer on Disney Plus. So that's
I don't think it was ever on Disney.
I don't think it was either, but it's not on there.
Yeah, I said that.
I'm offended and I feel old.
I do think it's important.
I love the voice from the distance.
Right.
Did you know, though, that it was the very first Disney Channel original movie?
You mention that? We've mentioned that already. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm leaving. I have to take care of, plural.
But I do think it's important because this generation of kids isn't going to relate to the first movie because there's not cell phones and all that kind of stuff. There might be a cell phone joke in it. I can't remember. I'm glad they're updating it for the new generation because this generation of kids isn't going to get the original one. And it's not going to be nostalgic for them because they weren't alive. So I'll watch the new one. I'm not sure how I feel about it yet, but it's fair. It's fair for them to remake it. It's a flattery to the original, I suppose. Katie.
I have a friend who worked on it though, so I feel like I'm like obligated to watch it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Katie, what is your opinion? Since this is your Halloween TV special.
I don't want to watch it. I get Ben has a valid point and I get that. But I'm like, really, we're remaking that movie, which was such a big part of every single Halloween for me. And like, it's weird. I feel like I can't say that I can't like talk badly about this one because like I watched the It remake and I enjoyed the It remake.
I loved it.
So I think it's just, it hit a heavy note with me because I was like, I watched it all the time. So,
you know, I think that that's not an unusual thing. Like back in the early 2000s, it seems like so long ago. I remember when they were redoing Battlestar Galactica and I wasn't into it. For one thing, they were gender swapping Starbuck. I was like, what? Yeah. What are you doing? And now I must say the new Battlestar Galactica is far superior to the original. And it's one of the best things ever on television. So you got to give it a little bit. Sometimes you got to give things some breathing room. Like, I mean, I'm kind of excited about the new Wonder Years coming out. I hope. It seems like the 60s might be too far away for us to be that nostalgic for. So we'll see. We'll see what it is. But I think it's going to be good. So I get what you're saying, though. Like, if somebody was to remake the X-Files, I'd be really, really apprehensive about that. So, but anyways,
I mean, they did make sequels to Halloween Town, which are also traditions for me.
Yeah.
So, but those were sequels, not remakes. So.
And speaking of specials on TV, Justin Clark, Worst Witch, starring Tim Curry, is another one that he loved. He also loved Charlie Brown, but Garfield Halloween is his favorite.
There you go.
And here's a couple of them that I remember. The Halloween Tree, Under Wraps.
Yes.
Casper Saves Halloween. The Flintstones meet Rockula and Frankenstone. I'd never heard of that one. In 1977, there was the Fat Albert Halloween special. Pac-Man had a Halloween special in 82. I don't remember. I do remember the Raggedy Ann and Andy and the Pumpkin Who Couldn't Smile special. I didn't like that one so much. A more recent one was Toy Story. Wait. Was it the Toy Story of Terror? Now, that was pretty cool. That one I liked. Here's one that there is one that's been going on for about 25 years, and it's new.
Treehouse of Horror?
Yes, The Simpsons Treehouse of Horror.
I haven't watched them, but they have an entire playlist on Disney Plus where you can watch every single episode, and they've actually been doing them since season 2, from what I saw.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I guess, and for me, it's a little bit, you know, and I guess, and Katie is going to have, you said you had something about to say to me, but I do have to say this. The one thing that bugs me a little bit is I guess this is the year we're celebrating. This is the 55th anniversary of It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown. The 55 years that thing's been around. It was not on TV last year, which sucked because Apple Plus came in and purchased it. And so you could only watch it on Apple Plus. You had to pay for it last year. But of course, this year, Apple's being generous and they're going to allow it. It's coming back to television, but it's not coming back to broadcast TV. It will be on PBS and PBS Kids on Sunday. On Sunday, October 24th at 7:30 p.m. So it is coming back this year, but I do think that's something that will soon disappear. It's kind of like the Grinch That Stole Christmas was on every year. Mm-hmm. And it then got bought by TBS, so then it was only on cable. But then that meant it came on 25 times during the Christmas season. Rudolph is another. Does Rudolph still come on? Let's not talk Christmas.
Can we not talk Christmas? Yeah, thank you.
Even though one of my neighbors has his Christmas lights up in the neighborhood, I want to just go take them down.
Yeah,
anyway, must be a pastor's kid.
Oh my gosh! But there. Speaking of that, there is a brand new special this year. I just want to know what you guys think about it. Muppets Haunted Mansion.
It was so good.
I have some thoughts.
I stan Muppets Haunted Mansion.
You couldn't stand it?
I stan it.
Oh, okay. I thought you said I can't stand it. I was like, no.
I stan it.
I really enjoyed it. I went into it thinking, like, because I was not a fan of the Eddie Murphy one, which my roommate made me watch last year, and I did not care for it. I'm sorry to offend anyone. It's not great. It's really not. And she got mad at me when I didn't like it. And I'm like, it's not my fault. It's a bad movie. But here's the thing. So I went into this thinking with a little bit of low expectations because I was like, okay, let's see what's going to happen, how they're going to remedy. I love the fact that we followed through the story like we were on the ride. Like there were so many little Easter eggs, like the wallpaper looking like Gonzo and Pepe. It was amazing. I will admit, though, that for a Muppet film, it was not as good. It falls a little lower on my list as far as Muppet movies. For like an adaptation of a Disney ride into a film, it was a lot of fun. But I just noticed, like, while we were watching it, during the musical numbers, the characters just weren't enunciating. I was having trouble really understanding what was happening. And it felt like the music was written kind of just in an afternoon. It didn't really, I think it could have spared being a musical and still been a lot of fun, perhaps even have been better, honestly. But I still had so much fun. I mean, Will Arnett was great. I loved that you had just, you know, those celebrity moments at every turn in the mansion, if you will, and the pun on the doom buggy, the fact that that's what Statler and Waldorf were in, because that made the most sense. And yeah, it was great. I mean, if you're a fan of the Haunted Mansion ride and a fan of the Muppets, you will really enjoy it. It was definitely better than Eddie Murphy. But yeah, I mean, my standard is Muppet Treasure Island. And
nothing can compare to Muppet Treasure Island. Like, let's be real.
Island and Christmas Carol. They're up there.
That is the best adaptation of any Dickens. Let's be real. But I mean, I'd say it was probably a little bit better than Muppets Most Wanted. but it wasn't like, yeah, Muppets movie, good. It was like, oh, a Muppets short special. That was fun.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was looking at it as. This was a special. This wasn't a full-on movie. This was a Halloween special. And so that's, I think I let it get away with a little bit. I had very few critiques just because I love the Haunted Mansion and I love the Muppets.
Me too.
So, you know, this is combining two things that I absolutely love. They made so many jokes. They had a Haunted Mansion stopping in the middle of the ride gag in the middle of the special, which was fantastic. I don't know who did Kermit the Frog's voice, but I'm putting it out there right now. Henson Studios. I've been known to do a Kermit the Frog voice.
Yes, I think I could do it pretty well.
So I was wondering if you might be taking, I don't know, applications, anything like that. I also do a Ernie if you're looking for that too. So
yeah, that's exactly what we said too. I'm so sorry to step on you, Ben, but that was a comment that Alexa, my spouse/roommate, she's not really my spouse, we'll make that joke, but she was like, why is this guy voicing Kermit? He doesn't even sound like Kermit. Everybody can do a Kermit impression. What is this?
I can't.
Yeah, anyways, continue.
I can't.
I can't either, but Ben can. Why wasn't Ben doing it?
Can you do Fozzie?
I can't do Fozzie. I'm not good at Fozzie. Okay. Listen, I can't touch the Lord of all things, Frank Oz. You know, you just can't. Yeah, a couple of the Henson original Henson character voices I've worked on. Why are there so many songs about rainbows?
Oh, it's so awesome.
You know, maybe I just need to look into puppetry and get into Henson Studios. Because that Kermit the Frog voice, love Kermit, but that kind of took me out of it a little bit. Because I was like, that doesn't sound like Kermit.
What about Miss Piggy?
Whoever they get to do Miss Piggy now, because I think Frank still does it for some of the big things, but they have somebody else who does Piggy and a lot of Frank Oz's characters. And whoever that is does a great job, I think, because I think Miss Piggy sounds great in all of the stuff. Because they did, you know, Muppets Now and Muppets The Office, whatever that was on ABC a couple of years ago, which I really liked. But
that show was a lot of fun. It's a shame it didn't go further. Yeah.
Agreed. Danae froze in a really funny spot there for a second.
You're on frozen, though. Katie.
So I enjoyed it. I, too, love the Haunted Mansion and Haunted Mansion Holiday. I thought it had so much fun. It was fun. It was just like a very, like, oh, if you love the ride, if you love Muppets, like Ben said. But Ben, when I texted him and I was like, this special is great. And then he says, but... What did you say, Ben? You have to tell them what you said.
I said decrepit Gonzo is the most terrifying part. Because there's a scene where Gonzo gets really old, like in a Dorian Gray thing. And it was terrifying. Because they did a fantastic job of what Gonzo would look like at 900 years old.
Yeah.
It was horrifying. And
also, these characters haven't aged ever. So, like, it's kind of like, oh, this hurts. Like, I've never had to see. But another thing that my roommate pointed out is Walter, who we got introduced to us in Jason Segel's Muppet movie, got added to it. So they have some of the other characters added, which was fun. But I just smiled. At the end of the day, I just smiled. I mean, the whole hitchhiking ghost, hatbox ghost. Hatbox ghost, you know, and I love Darren Criss, so I just, you know, anyway, but just, and any Muppet movie, you know, it has to have celebrities in it. And so they had that too. And it just kind of felt true to the Muppets for me, aside from a few things like Danae and Ben mentioned, but it still had those terrible puns, those, what you expect the Muppets to have. I personally was happy that Miss Piggy wasn't in very much of it because I have never cared for Miss Piggy. I know. I'm sorry. Don't hate me. But
she was Madame Leota, though. It was a great role for Miss Piggy.
Yeah, that was really... You know what? The one thing I did miss... Like, I enjoyed it. And I think I enjoyed the in-jokes inside the Haunted Mansion maybe even more so than the Muppets part. Because the Muppets have kind of... They're always great. I feel like they're a little bit more PG now than they used to be PG-13 in the 70s. And I wish we would let them loose a little bit. And I don't know if we ever will, but hopefully we will. But that being said, I don't want them to be dirty. I'm just saying edgy. But that being said, I loved the, for example, the you're walking through the hallway and you hear the guy banging on the door. Let me out! Let me out! And you see Fozzie, like you said, Fozzie is the Hatbox Ghost. And you see the special, what's her, the special guest, she was the bride with the seven husbands.
Oh, Taraji P. Henson.
Yes. I thought it was clever. So clever they just wove the story of Haunted Mansion into this story. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I didn't like, though. Wait, one more thing I did like, and then I'll tell you what I didn't like. I loved, even though you guys, some of you said you didn't like the music, the one musical number where it was almost like the opening of the Muppet Show. Dun, 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 dun. Yes, I loved it. And they even had the visuals of, like, it was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. And it sounded like, I was like, oh, this gives me the chills. I loved, loved, loved that. I wanted more of the other Muppets. Like, I felt it was too much Gonzo. Although Pepe the King Kong has become like the king Muppet of this past 15, 20 years. He's in everything.
I heard a rumor that it was supposed to be Rizzo with Gonzo at Haunted Mansion, but because of falling out, that actor wasn't able to do it.
Oh, I love Rizzo.
I know. And I'm like, I love Pepe too. I'll never forget, like, my first time at Comic-Con, we went to the Muppets panel and I got hit on by Pepe and it was amazing. But I'm just like, I feel like that would have just, like, pushed it up a little bit more for me if it had been Rizzo instead. You know?
Maybe you'll give me your phone number, okay?
Ben's just got these voices. And you know what? I was at a panel one time, I think it was at D23. When they had the Muppeteers, the Puppeteers, they called them the Muppeteers, come out, and you saw them doing the Muppets on stage above their head. And it was so cool to see how they did make all them. And I like, one thing I did notice was you could see the wires on the hands. And I know that in some of the most recent Muppet movies, I think they were digitally removing the wires so you couldn't see them. So I liked it. That felt good to me. I like seeing that puppets are puppets. Muppets are Muppets. Muppets are puppets, something like that. And I like they brought back the creepy, the minister, the Vincent Price creepy character with the long ears. Oh, I love that guy. He's so good. He's so good.
Just to circle back though to what you said, Jim, I think that was part of the reason that the Muppets Office show didn't do well is because they kind of did get a little more edgy. They weren't dirty or gross or anything, but it was definitely humor that wasn't all the time PG.
Right.
And I think that was part of the reason they only had a single season, even though the show is so good. It was so good. I will stand by that.
I love...
Wrap up thoughts on the Muppets.
Loved the Ed Asner cameo.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And did you see what they said? In the credit? Loving Memory. Oh, my gosh. What's interesting is there's a new series out on Disney Plus now, Doug the Dog.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Doug Days,
yes. Where Ed
Asner, I watched all of it.
As Mr. Fredrickson shows up.
In the first episode, they said had a memoriam in honor of kind of thing.
He's so great.
Real quick, I know we have to move on, but also another special came out, and that is the Star Wars Terrifying Tales.
Oh, that's right. I can't believe we didn't talk about that.
Which was Lego ridiculous. But Lego Star Wars, it was ridiculous, but like I still enjoyed it.
I haven't watched it yet. I'm really looking forward to it though.
Oh, that's right. That would have made a really cool graphic to advertise the show.
You'll like it, Jim, because they do make some references to some movies that I know you love, particularly The Lost Boys.
Oh,
so,
nice.
It's fun. I was really watching it and I was just like, what were they thinking?
Nice.
Like, to do this. Like, it's ridiculous, but I'm all for it. But they kind of proved, like, what Marvel has, where you're like, Star Wars can do anything, and people are going to watch. So,
if you
guys want some spoopy, funny, ridiculous Star Wars specials,
I want to
go watch it. It's also on Disney Plus. So
spoopy.
And I don't know how long it's been, but you did mention Lost Boys. The new movie has been greenlit. It's coming out. I'm so excited about it.
Is it a sequel or is it a remake?
I think it's
a
reboot, which is like a sequel where they make it appealing to a modern audience.
Yes.
Is Kiefer Sutherland still going to be in it?
I doubt it. He's dead. 30 years ago he died. I'm sorry I'm spoiling that for everybody. No, I would love for him to come back. But
in the movie, he's dead.
Get the move on here.
I was
but
like,
Kiefer Sutherland is dead. His
even though this is our even though this yeah. is our scary show, this is the scare guy. Did you see they cast Adam Warlock today for Guardians 3? Woo!
Oh, I didn't.
Yes. And I wish I could remember the guy's name. He looks a lot younger than he was.
Chalamet, they're putting him in everything now.
I know. But, you know, he's
I can't complain. I like him. I think he's.
See, I don't really care for him, but.
Really?
Me neither.
Saturday Night Live last year, he was great.
All right. Let's hear it for the Halloween specials. Woo! I want more of them, and let's keep Charlie Brown around for as long as, at least for as long as I'm alive. And even longer, because what a great, you know, some of these specials, they just have themes. What was cool is when Charles Schulz, he wrote the story for Great Pumpkin, some sociologists thought that he based it on actual myths that existed, and they were trying to figure out what he based it on. He goes, no, it's a satire on Santa Claus. Which is so great because Charles Schulz hated the idea that this idea that Santa Claus gave lots and lots of toys to all the girls and boys when sometimes you don't get very much or sometimes you get the rock. And what's also interesting, the character who played Charlie Brown in that special, he received rocks from around the country and candy that next year because kids felt sorry for him and they were playing jokes on him. So anyways...
Aww.
If you get a chance, it comes on October 24th or Apple Plus, or just buy it. Go on Amazon and buy it.
That's what I was going to say, Jim. If you need to watch it every year, just buy it.
Yes. Or if you need to watch 10 times a year. All right. To close.
If you're looking, really quick, if you're looking for a funny satire on the Charlie Brown Halloween special, there is a sketch. I think you can find it on YouTube called Blockhead's Revenge, where they use it's live action. It's a lot. It was made like 15 years ago. But they basically, it's a trailer for a slasher film, but it's the Charlie Brown characters. And it's really funny because they make fun of a lot of like the early 2000s slasher films. And
it's awesome.
It's good. But anyway,
Charlie Brown's the best. He's the best. Sparky. The last thing, the good thing about Apple buying them, they are doing new productions of Charlie Brown cartoons. They're making new stuff. There's another New Year's Eve special coming out this year. Apparently they're making a movie, so that I'm happy about. All right, guys, we're going to close it out. We are closing it out. Each of us are going to suggest or share at least one movie that we like to watch, one spooky movie we like to watch during this October holiday frame. And I would love if half of the Samblings would start. Because I know she brought notes.
I have notes. Listen, right. I have not talked very much this podcast. Sorry about that. But I'm going to talk now. I've been saving it. So I said, I'm a pastor's kid. I mean, we did do trick-or-treating and kind of celebrate Halloween. But I lived in a rural area where trick-or-treating wasn't really a thing because you'd have to walk half a mile to get to the next house. So I didn't do it a ton growing up. So Halloween, it's more of as an adult. I've been like, this is great. Let's just put on costumes and eat candy and watch movies together. I mean, like, even as a kid, I was like, I'm too old for trick-or-treating. So now my roommate and I have started doing this thing this month called Spooky Saturdays, where every Saturday we have friends over. We are watching a horror movie followed by an Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein, the Invisible Man. It's been awesome. So I do not have a favorite Halloween movie, but for the first time this year, we watched Rosemary's Baby.
That's it.
And I have wow, some
talk stuff. About deep.
We jumped right in. So first of all, I just want to point out Mia Farrow did an amazing job. She was 23 years old at the time. And this film came out in 1968. So what's really interesting, if you don't know, the story is about a young woman who is newlywed. They move into a new apartment and she realizes she's pregnant. Come to find out, it's Satan's baby because there is a coven of witches living in the house or living in this apartment complex where a lot of terrible things have happened. And at the same time, she comes to find out, spoiler alert for this movie that came out almost 50 years ago, more than 50 years ago now. Oh my gosh. Anyways, come to find out her husband was in on it. And there's this whole mess of these people controlling what she's doing, what she's eating, because they're trying to bring about basically the Antichrist and the end of the world. So I just want to point out, first of all, something that we realized because watching it with my roommates, we're all girls, how stuck this woman was in the situation. Because like I said, it was 1968. The first battered women's shelter did not exist in New York City, where this film takes place, until 1977. She was a homemaker and an expectant mother who literally had nowhere to go. And even part of the movie, you're kind of wondering, like, is she being gaslit by these people? Are they trying to make her think she's crazy to use her baby for something else? And a little bit of that does happen, spoiler alert, towards the end. But no, they really are Satanists who are using her for their own destructive end. And we just pointed out, like, you know, this woman has nowhere to go. They don't really talk about her extended family, but she's really cut off. She only has her husband, who's in on this terrible scheme, who is using this cabinet of witches to promote his career, and it is doing better. But just how stuck she was. Also, just a stab at how terrible Hollywood is. Like I said, Mia Farrow was 23. John Cassavetes, who played her husband, was 39 at the time. Very inappropriate, but you know, that's what happens. So it was just an interesting, So at one point, like, she goes to her old doctor, she cannot get help from anyone. So I would just like to point out how far we have come as a society for the fact that if a woman is in a situation like this, there are numbers to text, there are apps you can download, there are places you can go who will get you help. So if you are in a rough relationship, man or woman, please go find help. There are other options. I beg you not to stay in an abusive, be it physically or mentally, relationship. Also, I mean, we've kind of said this on here before, so I'll be quick about it. You know what I mean? We all say that we are professing Christians, and my roommates are also professing Christians. And the film does end with this baby has been born, and they are worshiping Satan by it. And something I did enjoy, because it was a very well-made movie, is it did not glorify this evil of Satanism. It showed that it was a dark thing, but it was also this theme of it is this, she grew up Catholic and she's being told the whole time that God is dead and God does not care about you. So something, you know, my roommate pointed out was that the way the story ends, Satan knows that he is going to lose. He knows that's what's going to happen, but he will do whatever it takes to take as many souls with him as he can. And that means convincing people that God is dead when he is not. So if you would like more proof, you know, Matthew 28:2, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. 1 Peter 5, your adversary, the devil, is a roaring lion walking about seeking whom he may devour. Do not fall for the lies of Satan, please. Also, Rosemary Bates Baby was so well made, just the transitions and even just the practical effects of the time. It was awesome. It was an amazing thriller. I definitely recommend it. Like A Clockwork Orange, I think it's important to watch these dark films, not just to be like, oh, it's so dark and I love it, but to be like, okay, let's discuss what the theme is here, because I am a writer. And those are my notes. Anyways, I would give Rosemary's Baby a 4.5 out of 5, just because it was like one dinner conversation and her husband was like, sure, I'll be a witch. Let's do it. That was the only unbelievable part for me. Thank you for letting me get long-winded.
I've been harassing Danae since she said that she watched Rosemary's Baby, because in the end scene she talked about, they all gather around and they go, "Hail Satan! Hail Satan!"
Okay, I'm gonna have to take off my cardigan. You got me winded, Ben.
When I watched this movie the first time in college, that scene comes in and they're all like, "Hail Satan!" And my buddies and I are just like, "What are we watching? Like, what is this? Like, we're just like." Now all of a sudden they're just like screaming "Hail Satan!" What is this?
It did feel, it almost felt off from the rest of the movie.
But it was because they were all like very, very manipulative and very skilled. And then at the end they're just like "Hail Satan!" And we're just like, what? So that's why I've been harassing Danae. Not because I'm literally saying "Hail Satan." It's because I'm making fun of that scene because it's so ridiculous, in my opinion.
Is it ridiculous, or is that how we are deceived by Sin Bin? Is it seeming something that is really good until the last moment? Okay, I'm going to stop preaching now. I'm sorry.
No. Interesting note, though. An interesting but sad note. The director, Roman Polanski, he had something terrible happen to him just shortly after he made this film. His wife, Sharon Tate, was killed by the Charles Manson cult here in Los Angeles. So it was very close together. He said the film was very direct. It was very stressful for him to make. And also the hotel where they filmed in 1980, John Lennon was shot and killed in front of that hotel.
I mean, this film also led to Mia Farrow and Frank Sinatra's divorce. Like, it was a big contributing factor. It was a lot of dark things.
No, I just didn't ever remember that they were married. That's bizarre to me.
It's, yeah, he was also like 30 years older than her, so don't get me started again.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Anyways, that's okay. Rosemary's Baby, 1968.
1968.
One of the classics of horror cinema. I agree with Danae. It's an unsettling film. Not the ending is just kind of whatever it is, but the rest of the movie, this woman trapped and feeling isolated, is so unsettling and so creepy and so well done. And Mia Farrow, her famous short haircut that she had and what she wore, which I mean, to this day, it's just like it's still one of the icons of horror cinema. I'm so glad that was your film. Katie, I would love to hear what your film is.
I mean, I always have to watch Halloween Town because
it's a great film.
I actually hope it didn't happen in 2019 because I didn't find out in time, and then 2020 happened, and then this year still kind of 2020 plus. So, but they recreate the whole Halloween Town in Oregon where they were filmed it every year, and 1 year I will go. It's going to happen. So the closest thing I could do is go to Disneyland where they have the giant jack-o'-lantern. That's the closest thing I can do. But also just recently, I finally saw Trick or Treat for the first time. And that is definitely going to be a Halloween movie I watch every year because it is so good. It is so fantastic. And just whatever's new out on TV that I can watch, like season 3 of You that is coming up out on Friday. I am going to binge.
Is it really?
That. Yes, it is.
There's also a TV series coming out that's out right now on Netflix that we've been talking about. We just not support, but Katie, what is it that you started watching?
Midnight Mass.
Yes.
I want to watch that.
Yeah.
So far it's got me, but I've only watched one episode. So.
Same director and creators from The Haunting of Hill House. So it's promising. Apparently it's pretty spectacular. I can't wait to watch it. How many episodes is that? Do you know?
Six or seven.
6 or 7. All right, good. All right. I'll go next and we'll let Ben end. Mine is, you know, an oldie but a goodie. But every year, it's a movie that's not really that scary. If you believe in it, it is. The Amityville Horror, the original 1979 Amityville Horror film, starred Josh Brolin and Margot Kidder as the DeFeo, not as the DeFeos, as the Lutz family that moved into a house in Amityville, New York, that 1 year earlier had experienced the tragic murders of the DeFeo family by Ron DeFeo, who shot and killed his entire family. And it's very mysterious to this day. Each member of the family, all six of them, were found face down with a shotgun to the back of the head. So everyone's like, how did that happen? Why was everybody asleep? And why didn't anybody wake up? And he claimed that voices in the house made him do it. And then 1 year later, the Lutzes moved in and they lived there for, I think, 29 or 30 days before they left and fled across the country, leaving all their belongings behind to sign a big book contract and make a lot of money. But anyways, I'm not saying it was fake. I'm not saying it was true. I'm saying it makes for a great creepy story. The reason this one is one that I like so much, when I was a kid, I was a little kid and I read this book because my aunt read the book and then my other aunt read the book, then my cousin, and then my whole family was reading this book and getting freaked out about it. And I remember picking up the cover. I found it at a garage sale and it was somebody said, this book will scare the hell out of you. And I remember as a little kid, I'm like, oh, it's got a cuss word on the cover. I'm going to read it, you know. And I read this and I love ghost stories. And it was quite scary. But the thing that made it scary is I saw the movie and then that music. The composer, I don't know how to say his name, Lalo Schifrin. He's an Academy Award winning composer of films. He did the music, and it's to this day is the most haunting, creepy music I've ever heard. As a kid, me and some neighborhood kids, we put on a haunted house, and we used this music as the soundtrack. So I heard it that whole Halloween, and now I associate that soundtrack with Halloween, with this movie about this family that is the most famous haunted house in America. If you haven't had a chance, go watch it. And you can skip the 2003 or 2006 remake by Ryan Reynolds. It's okay. It was during that whole era of film when every single new movie, scary movie came out, had a black and white short girl who moved like she was from The Ring in every movie, in every scene. So anyways, that's mine. Ben, why don't you close us with your choice?
Yeah, well, a big thing for me around Halloween specifically, I don't watch as many slasher movies. I know Halloween with Michael Myers is very much Halloween.
Comes out this weekend, Halloween Kills. Yes!
I am very excited about that. But slasher movies don't really do it for me for Halloween specifically. I like more of the supernatural, ghosts, goblins, vampires, werewolves, witches, that kind of thing. And last year we watched all of the Conjuring movies. We watched all the Insidious movies, stuff like that. We really got into that. But I would be remiss if I did not mention probably the movie that kicks off the Halloween season for my wife and I every year. It's actually two movies. And that would be Addams Family and Addams Family Values. neither of which are technically Halloween movies. Addams Family opens on Christmas, but those two are really big, like getting into the Halloween mood, the Halloween spirit, movies for my wife and I. So every year we love to watch. We just watched Addams Family last night. Actually, we watched both of them last night, but after Addams Family, I went and did stuff and my wife fell asleep on the couch. So we didn't really watch the second one, but those will be my suggestion to you. If you've never seen either of the Addams Family movies, they're just fantastic. So check those out. And Jim, you want me to wrap this up?
I do, but John Carpenter's a thing. Justin Clark, I agree. Yes, Ben, please wrap us up if you don't mind.
All right, really quickly, I will go around. Jim, where can we find you online?
On Instagram, on James D. Fry. My Instagram just pinged me and said that somebody has accessed my account and now I have to change my password. I'm hoping that's where you can still find me, but who knows? James D. Fry on Instagram or Jim Fry LA on Twitter or right here on The Scare Guy.
All right. Katie, where can we find you if we're looking for you online?
You guys can find me at KT_Christine across all social media challenges, including TikTok and Twitch. I have not been active on Twitch this month, taking a little bit of a break. But that's normally where you can find me. I'll probably do some cosplay streams this month because of the spooky season. But also, I just wanted to say a quick thing. If you guys love TV and movies as much as we do, please, please, please make sure that, and sorry, this is my one statement I'm going to make, make sure you're supporting anybody who is producing the stuff for you guys. If you guys are following to the news in Hollywood, there's some big stuff that could potentially be happening in the industry, but please stand behind those people who work to try to get you that content. They're just trying to fight to keep making you that content for longer. So if you guys have questions about it, you guys can hit me up on any of those social media platforms. I shared some videos about it if you guys need to know more about what's going on with IOTC. So.
All right.
And Danae.
You can find me. Thanks, Ben. You can find me on Instagram at DNAYS. I wanted to be on all the others as that, but I'm not a Twitter person, and that was already taken on TikTok. But you can find me on Instagram, and that has a link to all the other things that I'm on, which is not much else. But you can, and we're here on as the Con Girls on the Con Guy.
Yes, Katie and Danae are the Con Girls. They have their own sister program on our network of the Con something.
Con Crew.
The Con Crew. Hey, there you go. Con Guy, Scare Guy, Con Girls.
Work
con
in progress. Kids,
concave, convex, and congruent. And everybody, thank you so much for tuning into the Scare Guy tonight. I had a blast. I'm so glad I didn't bail on the show just because I was kind of tired. Usually if I do bail on the show, I have an actual reason to. I have rarely bailed just because I didn't feel like it, and I'm glad I was on it tonight. My name is Ben Cleaver. I call myself Old Buddy Ben because who doesn't want to hang out with Old Buddy Ben? I mean, you can find me on all social media at BenKlieWer. You can also search the hashtag BK421. I'm the one who's mostly using that. There's a couple that sneak in every once in a while, and I'm like, what does that even mean for you? This is the Scare Guy. Check us out at thescareguy.com. You can also check us out at theconguy.com. And happy Halloween, everybody, from everybody here. Have a safe and wonderful season. Get your vaccines, wear your masks, social distance until this thing is licked, and we will all be good to go. I love you all. Good night, everybody.
Be excellent to each other.
Woo!